It's actually, when it's a little bit like thinking of prairie plants.
So when you get into a crop that's more of an agronomic crop, has the potential to be part of this much larger, you know, supply chain, that's when you get into the potential to be, you know, impacting, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres. And so I think that's kind of exciting.
Welcome to the 365th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. For several years, Sogan Valley Farm raised organic vegetables near the southeastern Minnesota community of Cannon Falls. The operation grew annual crops on a few acres, utilizing diverse rotations and cover cropping. Such a system built the kind of soil health that was resilient and helped prevent runoff from entering the Cannon River watershed. Such stewardship is important to the farm's owners, Karen and Dana Jokola. After 8 years of primarily focusing on organic vegetable production, Karen and Dana have switched to growing vegetable and herb garden starts, as well as native prairie plants for use in restoration projects and home pollinator gardens. They also now raise hay and lambs and provide land access for other farmers. This transition out of intensive vegetable production opened up some options for the farmers as far as ways to use their land in a way that builds soil health and improves water quality. So, in the fall of 2022, they planted a crop called Kernza on 14 acres. Kernza is a form of intermediate wheatgrass, which is genetically related to common wheat. Kernza is actually considered the world's first commercially viable perennial grain. Farmers in the region have found that thus far, they can grow it for grain and forage for roughly 3 years without replanting it. Over the years, the University of Minnesota has been working with Kernza germplasm to develop lines that will do well in the climate and soil conditions found in the upper Midwest. This research on Kernza is being coordinated by the Forever Green Initiative, a U of M program that's working to develop a variety of crops that can provide an alternative to annual plantings of corn and soybeans. Besides Kernza, Forever Green is working with pennycress and winter camelina, among other crops. The idea is to create a stable of continuous living cover crops that cover the land year-round, generating economic benefits while protecting water and building soil health. The Jokolas are among a group of around 17 growers who are raising a total of over 650 acres of the experimental crop in Minnesota. Obviously, Kernza and the other Forever Green crops are nowhere close to competing with corn and soybeans when it comes to dominance of the landscape. But they're a start. Dana's father, Bill, was particularly interested in growing Kernza because its perennial nature and deep root system help improve water quality, something that's particularly important in a part of southeastern Minnesota plagued by nitrate contamination and erosion. Bill's family moved to the land Sogan Valley Farm is on when he was 15. During a 30-year career as a soil scientist, he worked extensively on ways to make farming more water-friendly. Like many of the other farmers raising Kernza, the Jokolas are grappling with how to make this experimental crop a profitable venture. Harvesting such a small grain has been a challenge, and consistent markets are yet to be developed. But the father-son team is willing to put up with a little trial and error, and they see a crop like this as a way for farmers to potentially have a positive impact on wide swaths of the Midwestern landscape. On an unseasonably cool day last August, Sogan Valley Farm hosted a field day sponsored by Clean River Partners, which, among other things, works with farmers in the Cannon River watershed to help them adopt conservation practices. During the field day, Bill and Dana provided a tour of their Kernza stand, which was just a few days away from being harvested. Afterwards, we talked about the agronomic and economic differences between raising an annual crop on a few acres and a perennial crop on a large expanse of land. Bill started our conversation by describing the farm's history and why his family is interested in adding a bit of perennialization to their acres. So Bill and Dana, we just had a field day here with Clean River Partners, and we had some folks down from Forever Green to look at your stand of Kernza. And I understand you have, I think, so around 11 acres here, and then maybe 3 acres across the hedgerow here. Tell me, what drew you to Kernza?
I'd heard about Kernza for many years, and Al Krauss, who's a conservation agronomist with Clean River Partners, had hosted some field meetings and online meetings. So I had tuned into those for a number of years, mm-hmm. and learned about how good it was for water quality, for soil health, these kind of things. And I'd been interested in it. And finally, a couple of years ago, when I talked to Dana about it, and he was interested in being part of it too. So I thought, well, there's two of us in it. We can go ahead and try this. So that's kind of fall of 2022 is when we planted.
Yeah. So you worked 30 years as a soil scientist?
Yes, I was professionally a soil scientist for University of Vermont and a little bit for University of Minnesota, and then USDA Agriculture Research Service. So a number of different things, but I worked as a soil scientist and soil fertility and so on.
Yeah. So soil health and sounds like water quality issues like that are really
that's
important
right.
to you.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I did work in quite a bit in water quality, both nitrate leaching, surface water quality, and then also some with trying to manage manure and fertilizer in ways that minimized carbon emissions as well. So
yeah. Can you give me a little background on this farm? Is this a farm you grew up on, or what's the family history here?
Yeah, our family moved here when I was 15.
Okay.
So there's that. That's the history.
Yeah.
It was before that. It was a small dairy farm, and then. My dad grew corn, soybeans, wheat, alfalfa. We had a small beef herd and fair-to-finish hog operation for many years.
Yeah. And you said this field, this 11-acre field we're standing next to right now, was like your best corn field.
Well, it certainly was one of the best. The whole farm is really pretty good soil. It's well-drained siltloam soil, so it is good from the point of view of moisture-holding capacity, but it also has good drainage. Mm-hmm. So it was a good spot to do this.
So Dana, sounds like it's a bit of a partnership here that you guys have to talk about things. I mean, what did you think about when you first heard about Kearns, or what was it that kind of drew you to that?
Yeah, I think I was drawn to it because of the potential to start to like perennialize more of our agricultural system. Mm-hmm. I think many of us who identify in the sustainable agriculture sphere have some critiques of a large scale kind of two crop system, annual crops that are planted every year, and so Kearns seemed like one of the first, and then, aside from hay, one of the first kind of options that you could start to see a place to displace some of the corn and soybean acres, and deep root system and reduced nitrate leaching, organic matter production, all great things. I think in the early years I was like I was interested, I was intrigued by it, but I was just kind of totally engulfed in my own world of vegetable farming, which is what I did for about 8 years. And so the first several years that my dad was getting interested in Kearnsa and tuning into these meetings, I just like didn't really have any bandwidth to actually do it, to really commit to that.
Or even acreage to plant it on.
Yeah, because you were using it pretty intensively for vegetables.
Well, yeah, I mean, we kind of added acres over our first several years of farming, so we were transitioning more acres to organic. In the end, we ended up about 5 years ago, we added an additional 10 acres, which we thought was probably all we'd ever need for vegetables. So there, the last couple of years, we had a decent amount in cover crop, which is a great thing in vegetables too. There's no reason to try to avoid that. But yeah, for a crop like Kearns, which is more of an agronomic kind of scale crop, you're not going to grow an acre or two of it. You need to have a decent amount, and we didn't really have that available. So as I made a pivot away from vegetable farming, it was a natural way to kind of fill in. What are we going to do with all this land, which is a great position to be in, a very privileged position to have this land available. So it was a natural time to jump in.
Speaking of vegetables, it must have been quite a pivot for you to put in a small grain, which there's a lot of upfront work. Get it established, and then you harvest it. With vegetables, it's that constant caretaking throughout the season. That must be a real switch for somebody who was a vegetable farmer for so long.
Oh, yeah. In terms of labor and management demand, it's almost almost non-existent compared to what I had been doing previously. But it's also, you know, it's a much longer crop cycle, and as we touched on during the field day, we're here potentially days away from our next harvest. We still have last year's harvest sitting in a grain bin. Mm-hmm. And so with vegetables, it's fresh market, and we're selling it within days of harvest, and usually getting income within weeks, if not sooner. Yeah. So that's been a change, but for sure it's been a quite a load off in terms of farm management.
Yeah. I wanted to touch a little bit about you talked about root systems, Bill, how important that is. Jake Younger's here from Forever Green. He's kind of the guy to talk about Kern's establishment, and he's done a lot of really cool studies on nitrate leaching. But he cited a figure that blew me away, was wheat maybe has a root maybe 2 feet into the ground. This can go as much as 6 feet. That must be, I mean, for somebody who maybe has studied soil your whole life and is aware of that, that must be just real striking.
Yeah, it's actually, it's a little bit like thinking of prairie plants, which are perennials, and they have a lot, you know, and I think that part of it is also that they're year after year, so you have that much more time to grow deeper and deeper. So, and I think with wheat or other small grains, or even corn and beans, they may grow a couple feet, or maybe corn grows 5 feet, but I mean, I think Kernza can go several feet beyond that. So, yeah. Because it is a perennial and it's a grass type, you know, type plant, so it has fibrous roots.
Yeah, I've been at farms where they dug a trench to try to find and they didn't find the roots, and a 6 foot person was standing in that trench, so who knows how far it actually goes. So take me a little bit through your process. When you planted this, what was maybe the history of this field, how you prepared the field, kind of what, for somebody who doesn't know anything, maybe even about small grain establishment, what all you guys had to do?
Well, we had to, before planting, we knew we had to do some kind of weed control. So we did quite a lot of tillage. I think Dana talked about it in there in the field meeting, but field cultivation and then using the tiller and so on. And I think we thought we got most of it, what we could at the time, but we're organic here, so yeah. We're not using herbicides.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the kind of prior crop, and so this field, well, all the fields were, the legacy is diversified vegetables, mm-hmm. so a whole range of different crops, kind of small plantings, row by row, you know, a field road of a Dutch white clover every 50 feet, so a pretty diverse crop and fertility history, probably generally ample fertility, I would say. Mm-hmm. And yeah, our tillage, like we aren't set up for kind of larger scale field prep, basically. So we had, you know, 3-point matted tiller that we used in our vegetable system. We did have a field cultivator, but yeah, it was a little bit of a kind of a hodgepodge of tillage that to get it to establishment. And it's a, you know, it's a relatively small seed. Like you probably need a little bit of a finer seed bed than you might with corn or beans.
You didn't have a no-till drill or anything, so you guys had to get equipment.
We rented the drill from the County Soil and Water Conservation District. It was a no-till drill, mm-hmm. but we weren't looking at no-till, but that's just what they had. It worked all right. The calibration was difficult, mm-hmm. to get the seed rate we wanted, but we managed with that.
And it sounds like you planted it in around September 1st of 2022. And the other thing that struck me was you said you had some rain right before that, but it didn't rain for about 6 weeks, and you thought maybe you had a failure on your hands.
We were concerned about that, but it did grow, and I think we just figured that there was enough moisture lower down, mm-hmm. and it survived, and we had quite a good stand, I think. So we didn't know what to expect in terms of the stand, but we ended up, I think, having a very good stand.
Yeah. No, I'll say that. It looks really good, and Jake was really, from the U of M, was really impressed with the stand you got here. Mm-hmm. So you planted it in 2022, and then 2023 was your first harvest.
Yes.
How did you harvest it, and how did that go, and kind of what was your production in that?
How much time you got?
You want to know the truth?
Yeah, right.
Yes, I do.
Well, We don't have equipment for either swathing or combining.
Yeah.
And actually, they recommend with Kernza to swath it as opposed to direct cutting. I mean, some people have a direct cut, but because it matures over the head matures over time, the top to the bottom. But we hired somebody to do the swathing, and then we had a hard time finding somebody to combine because not many people have pickup head for picking up the swathed windrows.
Yeah.
And so we did find somebody to do that, and he had a series of breakdowns over the course of the next few weeks.
Of course.
Eventually we ended up finding someone else to finish it up with somebody with an old pull type combine, and it was about four weeks, I believe, from the time we swathed it to the time we finished combining.
Wow.
And we were just very fortunate that we had almost no rain. Not everybody was happy about that dry spell, but we had one light rain, I think, in that time frame. So,
and how was the production, or what did you end up getting for production then in the end?
I think it was a pretty decent production. Mm-hmm. Yields aren't that high in Kernza.
Yeah, so you were able to harvest it, and then today we're at August 6th. So, and Jake says it looks like you're ready to maybe harvest here in a few days. Even though there's a fair amount of green, it looks, but this is different than wheat or something like that. It doesn't dry down completely. So sounds like you're going to swath it again and try that.
Yes.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about was you still have your last year's crop in the bin. And so marketing's a big issue. And that's something I'm going to be talking to other folks at Forever Green about for other podcasts. But that's going to be a big one for you guys. Is this going to work out economically? Because right now it's not. It sounds like it's a loss. You know, you're learning a lot, but there's only so many years you can go in that learning mode. So is that something you think a lot about, is what is the market, what you can do?
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, we're not raising Kernza. Our livelihood doesn't depend on it
yeah.
exactly, but we like to not lose money on it. And we are members. There's a grower co-op. That is essentially marketing the Kernza. It's called the Perennial Promise Grower Co-op.
Okay.
It's been going for about 2 years, and so we're members of that. So that they're the ones that are handling the marketing.
Okay.
So we've heard from them now and then, but so far we haven't gotten any final word on getting rid of what's in the, you know, selling what's in the bin. We would love to have that sold before we get the other one ready, but it doesn't look like it at this point because.
Yeah.
It could be, we could have something harvested here in a week even, possibly.
Right.
Yeah.
Dana, you had mentioned in your presentation that part of the reason you got interested in this is you kind of wanted to be part of a movement. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, it sounds like it's something that you're kind of, this is kind of maybe something you really see as, who knows what you'll learn from this, and maybe it won't be Kernza, but this is part of a movement made to perennialize a farm, get more perennials established, and do it and connect that to a clean environment, that kind of thing. That sounds like that's really important to you.
Yeah, I would say perennialize and diversify would be both important things. I sometimes I get into trouble when I share this view as somebody who's like an organic vegetable producer. We often hear kind of praise about what we're doing, and we're making this big impact. We're quote unquote saving the planet. We hear that a lot. We are growing food, healthy food. We're marketing it locally,
yeah.
Which has a lot of its own benefits, but it's also something that we produce a lot on a very small amount of land. And a lot of our production methods are still require actually quite a bit of tillage. And we plant cover crops. We try to mitigate it, but it's not, I wouldn't consider it necessarily sustainable by the purest definition. But also that the changes that we make really are only impacting a pretty small number of acres. So when you get into a crop that's more of an agronomic crop, has the potential to be part of this much larger, supply chain, that's when you get into the potential to be, impacting hundreds of thousands of acres. So I think that's kind of exciting to think about this, this suite of crops that Forever Green is working on and promoting, that it's just, fun to kind of be part of that, be an early adopter and be part of that process.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think we can keep doing what we're doing in perpetuity.
Upcoming Ear to the Ground podcasts will feature conversations on utilizing Kernza as livestock forage and what Forever Green is doing to address some of the marketing challenges related to the crop. For more on diversifying agriculture with small grains, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 365 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendell, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.